Hey, yo, it's the legendary DJ Marley Marl.
Alongside Collie Bond.
Right now, you're checking out the Legendized Podcast. On this podcast, we go beyond the origin stories of hip-hop's greatest artists.
And producers, and the classic records they made.
That's what's up.
Legendized.
Ho-ho, it's the legendary DJ Marley Marl.
DJ Collie Bond.
Mm-hmm.
And we're at the third episode of Legendized Podcast.
Wow.
Three
third.
Episodes deep now, Marley. MC Shan.
Shan is the truth, kid.
Ooh.
You know what
Shan
I'm saying?
Shan had him off this seat.
I had to tell you, that's why we had him first, because
yes.
It was meant.
Yes.
That was meant to happen.
And DJ Clark Kent.
Yes, the jewels of Mr. Clark Kent.
Wow, that's crazy.
That's what I'm saying. He went a long way, kid.
Yeah, man.
Wow, that's real talk. Now, this week's guest.
Woof. But before that, hot topics.
Okay. You know what it is.
Because we got some breaking news.
Breaking news. Fellas, this the summer's coming in.
Yes.
This is some breaking news to the fellas. Fellas. This is what you could do without.
All ears.
If you see a girl coming at you with Crocs and no socks, you better turn the other way. That's the giveaway.
Crocs.
Get away from that.
And no socks.
Crocs and no socks, kid. If you're sitting there listening to this right now, or any female next to you with Crocs and no socks, hit the door.
Yeah. Just don't get into a kicking match.
Oh, no.
You don't want to get into a kicking match with anyone wearing Crocs.
Especially with no socks.
And ladies, any dude step to you in some slides with no socks? You already know. To all those with the cracked heels, come on, you had a good year to moisturize your heels.
Yeah, it's real talk. That's real talk. A little cream, you know, the same thing you put on your face before you walked out looking cute.
Yeah.
Could have thrown it on your little ankles, too.
Word up.
Around a little down there, too. It's all good.
Especially if you're wearing Crocs with no socks.
That's an alert.
Molly, I got an interesting topic.
What you got?
Recently, some research was brought about marijuana and music.
Woo.
Why they go together?
I don't know. It's kind of like saying why ecstasy and fucking go together. It's like why eggs and cheese, you know, and
what
eggs and fucking syrup,
peanut butter and jelly,
Reese's peanut butter cups. Why is that? Why does that taste so good? The chocolate in there,
well,
peanut
they
butter.
They say that, you know, the weed enhances creativity.
Mm-hmm.
And focus.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's really good for musicians.
Yeah, okay.
And they see the, you know, the connection.
I think, too, when you smoke, you have a little weed, and, you know, you hear things a little, you know, more in stereo.
Ah.
It's like, it's like you're going into the effects, into your rack, and you're getting something to widen the strings out.
Mm-hmm.
You're smoking a little weed, it just gets wide all of a sudden.
Well, my man, the guitarist for Fleetwood Mac,
yeah.
Lindsey Buckingham, he said, if you've been working on a piece for several hours and you smoke a joint, it's like hearing it again, but for the first time.
That's I could get with that. You know what's so funny? Who's your favorite guitarist?
Wow. Slash.
Slash?
And yours?
The cat from Queen.
Oh, wow.
That nigga, nice, kid.
Oh.
It was the combination of Freddie Mercury's voice and this dude's guitar playing. The way, you know, it was like, it was something special. I was like, just looking at those four little cats just making all that music.
Where do you place Nile Rodgers?
Nile Rodgers, he's funky. He's not James
he's
Brown
not a guitarist,
funky.
He's not a guitarist?
He's dope. He's a strummer. He strums along with that. He's not going key for key with the nigga singing.
You know what I'm saying? I got you.
Guitars add something special to a song. I don't care what it is. You know what I'm saying? White people love guitars on records.
Oh yes.
Yeah. If there ain't no guitar, that's why hip-hop wasn't popular at first. There ain't no guitars at first. What you listening to? You listening to the beat?
Well, yeah, it was just the beat, right?
Yeah, it was just the beat.
Oh, yeah, well, yeah.
And then
started, a little bit of bass line started coming.
Then the rock scratches started coming in the Run DMC style.
Ah, yes.
But then, you know, and that's how it crossed over. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Ding, ding. You just been legendized.
For real, legendized moment.
Legendized.
All right, So Jay-Z, in a recent interview, discusses that in 1999, he boycotted the Grammys because DMX got snubbed. He didn't get nominated.
Okay. Okay. One thing I can tell you about Jay-Z. Jay-Z is like when Nas come out with an album, Jay-Z drops some bang. Like LL going to Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, Jay-Z's going into. So. And Jay-Z made a record back in the day called Can I Live?
So you know, Jay-Z, can you let
them live? He'd be smashing cats. I wonder if it's on purpose or not. What do you think? What do you think?
I mean, he does know how to strategically market himself.
Yeah.
I don't know.
It's crazy.
But it is a coincidence.
Yeah, it's coincidence.
High-level coincidence that it happens over and over again.
Yeah, like every time Nas drops something, Jay-Z drops something the same day. And then he just put Beyonce on it.
To kill all of them, right?
Like, duh. You have the beehive on your ass if you beef. Be buzzing on your ass. Come on.
Listen, yo,
I'm just being a consumer right now. Just saying we see.
We're still fans of this. We're fans of hip hop. That's why we do this Legendize podcast.
That's why you're wearing an Ether shirt.
You got to see it to believe it.
That's funny.
Yeah, man.
Yeah. That's real talk.
Legendize.
I got to tell you, our guest today is truly one to be legendized. They're one of the greatest bands in hip hop. Is the greatest hip hop crew that come out of New Jersey. That's just hands down.
The group that was formed in the mid-80s, originally known as the New Style, mentored by Queen Latifah.
Mm-hmm. Their songs have rocked parties, floors, and arenas around the world for decades. The Stadium Anthem Kings, man, that's the real talk.
Grammy Award winning, American Music Award winning.
They're about to celebrate their 30th.
Woo!
30th.
Oh, God.
That's real talk right there. That's real talk.
That's Hall
man.
Of Fame talk.
That's real talk, man. That's worth being.
That's
worthy
talk.
Of being. Worthy of being legendized right there. That's 30 joints y'all put in, man. I mean.
Yeah, hip-hop band.
Let's introduce, man. Naughty by Nature. Woo! We got everybody here.
KG, Vin Rock, Trick or Tretch.
All three. That's what I'm saying.
All three here on Legendize.
That's real talk, Legendize. This is real talk,
legendary,
man. And I'm going to tell you, y'all are one of the groups that I always said to myself when somebody would ask me, like, yo, who's somebody that is out there that you would have produced? And I'm like, yo, it's always Naughty. It's always something that I always thought of. That's real talk, man.
Appreciate it.
So I hope there's some room on that 30th somewhere for your boy.
Gotta make that happen now. Yes, absolutely. Better late than never, man. This is the absolute, this is the great time to make that one happen. Definitely. This is the absolute time to do it, Marley.
That's what's up.
So as we were talking to Tretch behind the scenes, you dropping new material for this 30th anniversary?
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
All new material.
Yeah. We in the lab now, yo.
Yep.
And it's funny, it's like, we've been doing this like for a couple of years, just at different spots recording, hitting different studios. Mm. We got like a nice little catalog, and we like right now, we still in the studio. So we looking like to bang out almost 12 more in the next couple of weeks.
Wow.
Let's go back.
Let's go back. Let's go back to East Orange, New Jersey.
Yeah, like 30 years, like 1986.
No. Let's go back. Yeah. Matter of fact.
Oh, that was real cruddy. That was dirty.
We talking New Style?
New Style.
All right.
What were each of y'all doing before you became the New Style? Vin?
I was the stash man for our local drug dealers, you know, me and my sister. Okay.
Real talk, that's why we're here.
In a dump.
Full disclosure, my big brother Mike Tyson said, Vin, never incriminate yourself, but, you know, statute of limitations should cover me, man. But
also, too, let's share that. Let's save that, Vin, for the movie. Like, not give out too much of the behind the scenes.
Yeah. It's called the Hood NDA. You know, you can't disclose too much. But basically, man, I'm the youngest of seven, five sisters and one brother. And, you know, just coming up in the 70s into the 80s, man, it was about, you know, just observing my brothers and sisters and looking and see what was out there. I had a guy, Loke, on my block. He used to always play all of the underground mix show or mixtape joints with Dougie Fresh, all the classic battles, Busy Bee and Kumo D and all of this stuff. And I remember just seeing Gladys Knight and the Pips, Save the Overtime for Me video, and Malcolm McLaren Buffalo Gals video. Wow. And just falling in love with the breakdancing element. So
two Buffalo Gals go around the outside, round the outside, round the outside.
Those are, you know, breakdancing and beatboxing. So for me, it was like the Fat Boys, you know, rest in peace, Buff, and Dougie Fresh hearing like those rocks in his mouth. So for me, you know, I kind of picked up on hip hop from breakdancing and beatboxing. So that was. My move.
Yeah. Wow, and then me, you know, I was just a lover of music. Always heard music around my house through my aunts, my uncles, my parents. I finally got into music by actually seeing the movie Wild Style. After I saw the movie Wild Style and I saw Flash on there, you know, cutting up, I just said, you know what? That's what I want to be. I want to be a DJ. Wow. I want to get into that.
The official adventures of
the great Master.
So that's when I start really, really getting into, and that's what really drifted, you know, got me into really DJing, and then the producer part came later, but it started off definitely as a DJ and just the love for the culture of hip hop.
That's what's up, Trigger Tretch.
Yeah, and me, my mom's actually, she had the first Sugar Hill Gang 12 inch. So I was hearing hip hop right up in the house, and I'm like, what the hell is this? So I knew all the lyrics, had them all down. And it wasn't enough hip hop. So I was just, or which I thought. So I started writing. Mm. And then when I started going to VLD, me and Kareem EO and Kenny Clark, we used to skip school and go uptown. So we used to hit the Wee Spot 145th and Edgecombe. But it was also getting all the mixtapes, the Busy Bee Kumo D battle. We used to bring the mix cassette. Mm-hmm. And I used to hear battles like that. In spots.
In the place to be MC Kumo D, the coolest of the cool, can nobody rock like me. Remember this. 1, 2, 1, 2. Doing the do now. Hold on, Busy B. I don't mean to be bold, but put that ball, did it, ball bullshit on hold. We gonna get right down to the nitty gritty. Gonna tell you a little something why you ain't shit. It ain't an MC top that you don't hug. You even bitching.
None of this on no radio, nothing. I said, yo, I'm in love, and I'm gonna be a battle rapper. Ain't nobody gonna tell me up.
Okay.
And yeah, of course, after B Street, it was like, man, it ain't no other path for me.
Yeah, that's real.
I'm done.
You know what's crazy? At the end of B Street, how they had that celebration, and I'm looking at B Street, right, and everybody on stage, I'm looking at my boy Bernard Fowler, who's from the Peach Boys, who sing with the Rolling Stones right now. I'm looking at his brother, Fred Fowler over there. And watching them up there with the whole crew, I'm like, you know, B Street was real inspirational for me too as a kid.
Give it up to me, baby, to the B Street. So
yeah. I'm watching that. You know what I used to watch as a kid on the come up? We used to watch Herbie Hancock rocking it.
Right.
Yeah.
The rocking it concert. But the live one, it was like a live concert with them. Right. And like I think Bernard Fowler was singing. He's from the hood. And the DJ DXT was on the
DXT,
cuts.
That's right.
And you know, we used to study those cuts. We knew every cut this cat was doing on the record. We would go home and study his cuts. And that's crazy. I mean, it's like a lot of that stuff is very inspirational. It's like before we get on, we don't know what's in store. You don't know what the fuck is in store.
Yeah, because I remember growing up too, like even before that, I used to try to set my alarm or put my tape on, and I had a double sided tape recorder. And sometimes I end up taping it on one side and it'll go over the other side and record over. But I used to try my best to stay up and listen to HBI, WHBI, man.
Yes. Mr. Magic, Supreme Team, Hank Love DNA.
Hank DNA, yup. I used to try to get those things. Sometimes I would get it, and it would be the best. I would just be so happy. And sometimes
you go to school with that,
or the tape would stop, and I'd just be like, "You gotta be kidding me, man!" But that part of it, man, like, oh my god, like that stuff had me mesmerized, and I just loved, you know, the culture and just what hip hop stood for, man, and all of that. And you used to get those live battles played on there sometimes, and you just used to just hear it and feel it, man.
Yes.
It was just great. It just sucked me in, man.
Legendized. So how did y'all get together as a group to form a hip-hop group?
East Orange High School. We all went to high school together in East Orange. I'm a year older than them, so I was in the grade higher than them. For the senior talent show, as a senior, I wanted to do something in the talent show, so I was going to DJ in it by myself. So, like Vin was saying, he started off as a breakdancer. Me and Vin grew up three blocks away from each other. So the guy, Lope, that he's talking about, that he used to breakdance with, used to breakdance actually with another guy that lived directly across the street from me named Ski. So Vin used to be breakdancing with them sometime, and I would actually be the music supplier for them to practice breakdancing while they were out on the sidewalks. I would be up on my sun porch supplying the back music. So I'll be up there practicing, and they breakdancing to it. So one day I just said, you know what, Vin, why don't you come over here and let's just mess around. You beatbox or whatever, and I'll try scratching, and let's try something. And when it came time for that talent show, that was the first thing that I went to and said, Vin, why don't you do this talent show with me? And then we started rehearsing for it and everything. And we both just realized maybe it'll make it dope if we brought in an MC. And Vin said, I know the perfect person. We should go and get Tiny.
Tiny.
Little grimy Tiny.
So Tretch was in my health class at the time, you know? And back then, you know, this was like 85, 86, and Freddy Krueger was really popular. So as I remember, Tretch was in my health class, and one of his hands, he grew his nails really long. He was a fan of Freddy Krueger. You know what I mean? And this kid would come every other day with some ill rhymes, and I had to beatbox for him all the time, you know? And we all knew each other in the hip-hop circuit around the way, but we kind of really locked in. So I told Kay, I'm like, yo, it's this kid, man. In my health class, he comes every other day with new rhymes, man. And, you know, Kay was like, bring them over. And when, you know, we all gelled, that's when we got together, you know, for that first talent show. And if you listen to our song, Yoke the Joker, on our first album, Tret says he's the Freddy of rap. So it's the Freddy Krueger of rap.
I smoke your skull, your brain a complistory. All fuzzy, dirty, dizzy, dizzy. Get the fix in these. Remember how blistery? You ain't ready for the Freddy of rap. You can't kill me. I step into your dreams, you feel me.
You know? And it had those keys. Doom, 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 doom. So it was really horror rap back then.
And the funny thing is, the talent show was coming, and it was like a deadline to the talent show. And the only thing we had the homies, we had our dancers, that was the homies on the block. Like, we had the whole show, everything. We just ain't had no name for the
for that talent show. That was our first time rocking together, and we didn't have a name of the crew. And you know, back then when you perform, it was just all about routines. And you go out there with the routine, never mind the name of your crew. It was about, if we're going to go up here, we got to rock the crowd. So we just concentrated on the routine. But the way we started the routine, K scratched in the Beastie Boys, it's the new style. And we started the show. So after we crushed the show, we was like, yo, that was dope. You know what? We need to call ourselves the new style, because that's what really set everything off. And that's how we ended up with the name The New Style.
Now, Kay, what if you would have cut something else that day?
Right.
Would have been, you know, we would have been called something else. I don't know. Who knows what we would have been. I'm sure Tretch would have came up with something like he did with Naughty by Nature, though.
That's what I was going to ask. How did y'all make that transition from the new style to Naughty by Nature?
Well, we felt as though like the new style was kind of like the 80s. You know, that just the name alone, it sounded, we was coming into the 90s now. So, and plus we had a deal that was on Bone and Me Records, which was a subsidiary of Sugar Hill Records, and it was a shelf sitter. We was trying to get away from the new style name. Right. So right. While we were signing the Flavor Unit and everything else, about to have to deal with Tommy Boy. And here again, we had the problem with no name. So what I had did, I just went through a gang of titles of songs that I had written, and like new style songs. One of the names of the song was Naughty by Nature. I said, yo. And K and Ben was like, yeah. But we went to like Shaquem and Flavio and everything. And Tommy, they was like, it sound too long. Won't nobody remember. And I'm like, nah, I don't think so. I think everybody out there could be like, I'm Naughty by Nature. Like feel a part of the group. Like this, I think it's long, but it's short enough to be catchy enough and stuck to the guns. And then K and Ben was like, yo, we feeling that name. So we ran with it after that.
Legendize.
How did y'all meet Flavor Unit? Like, how did y'all meet Latifah and Shaquem?
Well, I had known Latifah from, she was a solo artist doing talent shows at the Rally Racket Club and Civic, like all the local spots. And I was a solo artist before I got with Vin and Kay. So I had already known like her and Apache. So when it was time come, we was like, yo, we need management. For one, we doing all these talent shows. We was knocking every talent show out in our area. We was like, we got to take this to a next level.
Yeah, it's all about perfect timing, man, in the right place at the right time. And what was perfect about that is Flavor Unit actually happened to be starting, well, Shaquem was actually starting to become a management company, you know, and branch and start off Flavor Unit management. So at the time, like Tretch said, we were already building up our name for ourselves throughout East Orange, doing a bunch of talent shows, winning a bunch of talent shows. So we threw our own party and we were just like, yo, we're going to show them or whoever comes that we got Jersey and we got our town on lock. So they'll see what we can do, you know, locally and potentially or hopefully be able to see what we got building here and they can help us take it elsewhere. So we threw the party up to the college. It was packed up in there, everybody in there. We killed it. We invited the whole Flavor Unit over there and Mark the 45 King, Shaquem and the whole crew, Apache, Latif, all of them came by and they came there and they saw the place packed, saw us kill it. And after that, Shaquem came and sat down with us and was like, yo, I'm starting Flavor Unit management up. And I want you guys to be the first group that we outside of the Flavor Unit that we manage. And that's where it started right there.
We definitely got to give props to Mark the 45 King, because even when, you know, we first started pursuing Flavor Unit, man, you know, Latif, Lord Ali Basti,
Lakim Shabazz, Double J.
They were all popping already, you know, so we knew that we wanted to be down with Flavor Unit, so we began to reach out to them. And really, in order to even get to Shaquem and Latifah, you had to get that approval from Mark the 45 King, Latif,
Apache.
Because if you was whack, you wasn't going to be down with Flavor Unit, you know?
Hold up. I just got to ask one thing. Where was Apache from? God rest the dead. God rest him.
Apache's from Jersey City.
Jersey.
He was nothing to be played with.
Now, you'll talk about, I mean, I know the talent show circuit was real heavy back then. Did you come across any artists around that time who actually got signed?
Oh, yes.
Please speak on it, Legendize. Please.
If you can imagine back in the day, you know, hip hop was so raw and real and new. So in Jersey, we used to have the Tough Team Talent Competition at Club 88. Mm. So they would invite kids from literally all over the state of New Jersey, but the surrounding counties. So you had from the likes of Naughty by Nature, Queen Latifah, Lauryn Hill, Wyclef, Lords of the Underground, Redman.
Oh, Lords.
Poor Righteous Teachers.
Ooh. Redhead Kingpin.
Ooh. Oh, wow.
Redhead was nice.
Twin Hype. Yup.
Twin Hype was nice too.
King's Son. Yup.
King's Son. Yep. Wow.
You put so this is where you really had to bang out back in the day, man, and show what you know. So, you know, we knew like, coming from Jersey, first of all, we were like stepchildren to the New York hip hop scene. We already knew, like, you wasn't from those five boroughs. If you go into New York City talking about some hip hop, you were literally risking your life. You know what I mean? So we were getting our chops up over there in Jersey.
It was tough.
And that Tough Team Talent Competition, the way it went down was the crowd would always judge. So we would come there so deep, you know, and we were coming off the block. We were organized. And after that first talent show, we were the new style. So we always invested in merchandise, jackets, T-shirts, everything. And we would come so deep that we would win every week. But then the other contestants started complaining, like, man, they bring the crowd, and it's lopsided. So they began having judges. So when we came through, we would still win, even with the judges judging. And then that's what made us really step it up and say, all right, bet, it's time to go into New York, you know?
Also, too, that was one of our first introductions to Kool V. We got a chance to meet Biz because Kool V was one of the judges sometime. Once they started not letting the crowd judge, they started getting a couple of people to do it. The celebrity guys come in, and Kool V was one of the ones that came in. And Kool V, you know, was one of the first people that we actually met. And he always showed us love from the door and just was like, yo, you know what? You guys got it, man. You guys got it.
That's what's up. That's what's up.
So what was that transition like after banging out show after show in Jersey to cross over and to come to a New York crowd? Then you have a memory of when you first hit that New York audience and what it was like?
We got booed off the stage, bro. We got booed off the stage,
Talk to us, Stretch.
Man, we told this kid Vin over here, you know, the one thing we can't do, homie, don't say Jersey till after we done took the whole thing. Don't say it. Man, Vic come up here, his chest all out, grab that mic. Yo, Jersey in the car. Boo! We thought the Sandman came out. And the illest thing about that first performance is Stan, you know, Stan is a legendary promoter, and he was promoting Cool DJ Red Alert's birthday party. So this is right in the middle of when Native Tongues was hot. You know, you had Cool DJ Red Alert at Red Alert Productions. So you talking about all of Native Tongues, the Jungle Brothers, you know, Latifah was down with them. De La Soul was in the building. KRS-One, Tribe Called Quest. I mean, the who's who was at Red Alert's birthday party, man. And Kay's brother at the time, oldest brother, Pook, was managing us. So he knew Stan, and he politicked for us to open up for that show. The funniest thing about that show I remember is that we came from Jersey and it was wintertime. So on our way over, we drove over and it was clear as day. You know, no snow on the ground, no nothing. But when we did that show and got booed off the stage, man, when we got outside, it was like 3 feet of snow outside. And it was the slowest, loneliest drive back to Jersey, man. It was crazy. And they're all saying, Vin, you should have never said we were from Jersey. I'm like, man, fuck, we're from Jersey.
They sent us right back to Jersey on that boo train.
Yo, but how did it feel coming back, killing them after that with the hits? Yeah. How did it feel when y'all came back? You get what I'm saying?
You know, and that's part of, you know, the stripes that you take and the lumps and bruises that you take on your way up, man. I mean, we remember it all. We soak it all in and we embrace it as well. I mean, because this game's all about wins and losses. So at whatever you do in life, period, you know, so we look at it like, you know what? That was a learning or step that we need to get by. Same thing, even when we first got our first deal with Bon Ami, the Old Sugar Hill. It was just a step. And it's nothing. And we learned a lot from it. And you look at that stuff and you find the positives out of all of those things or that go wrong. And you take the positive, you leave the negatives behind and you take the positive and pluck them out and you move forward with those, man. And that's what we did.
Yeah, those negatives, though, definitely give you those chips on your shoulders. We like, we coming back. We going to get them. Oh, we going to get them. We like, we had an album that flopped, you know, people around the way sleeping on us. We went to New York and they sent us back home with our tail between our legs, but we always knew that we had that hometown support and we knew we had that talent, yo, and we would rip shows everywhere we went. So those were one of the attributes. So that was probably one of the number one attributes we had once we got on with Tommy Boy and OPP broke. Like, we were blazing through all of the live shows because we had that much, you know, practice in the trenches.
Right. And that's probably, and to us, that's why it was so satisfying. Once we did get on and we did three shows in one night at the Apollo and we tore all of them down. And it was just right. Like the Ooh. Best feeling ever, because really? It was just like, yo, you know, we finally got back and was able to conquer New York. And we was just like, yo, this is it.
And that is like the biggest stage to be on in Apollo? New York.
Come yes, on, and it was oh my God, it was pandemonium in that place, man.
We actually thought that top balcony was going to come down on that third show.
Yeah.
It felt like an earthquake.
So whose idea was it after that? You know, the success comes in, you got every arena screaming. Everybody's going crazy. Whose idea was it to start the merch line?
Well, it was all of our ideas, because back in the New Style days, like I said, we always invested in the merchandise, especially KG. You know, he would always go to the Coliseum in Jamaica, Queens, and go visit the Shirt King.
Shirt King.
Shirt King made them New Style jackets, baby.
Okay.
So we always had that presence. It's just that once we got with Tommy Boy Records and, you know, Monica Lynch worked with Mark Weinberg to come with the logo, the iconic logo we have now. It was like, you know, just by default, Tommy Boy did the first OPP sticker, the first OPP t-shirt, the first, you know, OPP boxers. And just organically, we picked up on that. Because, you know, Marley, back in the day, the labels would produce content just for their street teams, their radio promotion guys. And we were like, all right, bet. Right. Where's the source? We're going to take our money and buy two times as much. And then we were using that stuff and promoting our own. You know, we had our own inventory. And then it just evolved into, this is definitely the thing to do.
Yeah, right. So we've been doing this stuff from day one. Remember, even going back to the Apollo. Remember, we went to the Apollo that time and held the New Style jacket up off the balcony thing. Chuck D was like, I see you, New Style.
and another thing that made us formalize it, because it was, again, you know, we were coming off the block. And when we blew up, you know, we shut down the block and we were taking everybody, you know, with us on the road. And really, KG's mom and sister was running all of our fan club correspondence. So if the fan club info was on the back of the albums and the cassettes, you know, we had a P.O. box. So they would go there, pull out of that stuff, bring us, you know, the most interesting mail they had. However, we were still selling the T-shirts and stuff from the block. So unfortunately, our block got raided by the feds, the FBI. We were on the road, but we got it. Like, this was one of the first major raids in hip hop.
Wow.
ATF came, raided the house, you know, raided the whole block. You know, there was a couple of guys that was still, you know, hanging on back then. We were kind of telling them to leave that alone, but they figured, yo, the block was hot. Right. And now that, you know, we're legit, they could get that paper. But, you know, the feds was watching. So we had to legitimize it because they took our bank books. They took all of our merch money, tried to jam us up. So we got beyond that. And then we realized, you know what? We got to legitimize this. And, you know, at the same time, Spike Lee had Spikes join in Brooklyn. And we had Hassan Mateen and LaShawn Coleman from Jersey who actually worked over there. So we would go over there, and me in particular, I would go over there and see how Spike had Spikes join in the heart of Brooklyn down there. And I was like, you know what? We could do the same thing, because when we go on the road, we could take guys with us. But if we have a store, and then even at that time, we had, you know, Naughty by Nature, then we had the film company, and we had Ill Time Records. So we were looking at it as this would be our own Disney store, and anything, any content, television, film, movies, any new artists we have, that merchandise would be housed there. So that's when we chose to invest in that, you know, retail store and make sure that if we're on the road or if we're home, you know, some of our guys and a lot of our people would have jobs.
Legendize.
This is the story of how a film gets made. Starring Josh Rubin.
It's his first feature.
You Were the Worst's Aya Cash.
Can we not do this right now?
And SNL's Chris Redd.
He's not doing it for a paycheck.
Okay. I'll see y'all.
Join us for the making of Scare Me, a horror comedy from the brilliant mind of Josh Rubin.
This year you're going to make a movie no matter what.
Tear down the fourth wall of filmmaking with our crack team of investigators.
Don't you come at me and try to get me to spill some stuff.
This is Make Cool Shit, hosted by Aaron Hieffitz.
It doesn't get any better than this.
Season 1, Make a Movie.
3, 2, 1.
Everywhere you enjoy podcasts.
So I guess I'm going to learn the film business.
Legendize.
I want to get to the individual history of each one of you. I'm going to save KG for last because then we can talk about production. But a Tretch, a unique MC flow and style, unmatched. Who were your influences?
You know, as a group, it was Run DMC from the door. Oh, then it popped off. It was LL. And I always say I'm a combination of Run, LL, Slick Rick, KRS-One, Coogee Rap, Big Daddy Kane, Rakim. Oof. Like, I studied these guys, like, in Chuck D. Mm. So when I get my militant side, Anthony Armageddon on them, that's my Chuck D coming around. Like, I was like the lyrical Busy B, you know what I mean? Kumo D, Melly Mel. Like, I was so deep into the lyrical side of those. Those were my dimes. I say I got a bit of all of them in me.
That's incredible. And I can hear the influences. Now, Vin, you went from breakdancing to on the mic. Who were your influences?
Well, my influences were definitely Run DMC because I love the arrogance and the stage presence and the cockiness of Run. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, he had it. Yeah.
And then it's like Chuck D, I loved his militancy and how he, you know, taught us about our history and taught us not to take shit from the system, you know? And then ultimately, my guy is KRS-One. He's my favorite rapper, hands down. He's my top five, dead or alive, everything. Because KRS, you know, he definitely had those stage skills, the way he projected on the mic and controlled the crowd. And he always had crowd control. So this is where I get that from, the crowd control. So if you're able to articulate through that mic and blow through that mic and articulate what you're saying to the crowd, they'll always do what you need them to do. Plus, you know, KRS, he was conscious. He was lyrical. He had an incredible stage show. But at the same time, him and his BDP crew, if they had beef, they could run right through you. These are the attributes that I like. And I think when you see Naughty by Nature, you know, people see Tretch as an obvious aggressor, but KG and I in the back end, it's like we're navigating and organizing an army on the back end.
No doubt. No doubt. Moving in silence.
Yo, if you ever want to see Voltron, come fuck with Naughty. You know, if you think there's some beef or division,
no doubt,
come fuck with Naughty and you want to see unity, bro.
All right. Now, Kay, I'm saving you for last because you and Marley got this production thing and I'm a fan of both of you. We had Clark on our last episode, DJ Clark Kent, and I asked him the same question I'm going to ask you because Marley has told me many a times in the studio, he was like, yo, we got a little advantage as producers because we think as DJs. So you telling us that you started off as a DJ and then production. How did that help you in terms of production?
Astronomical. I mean, it's just like the timing aspects of it, you know, even the knowledge, you know, from a DJ standpoint, the knowledge of knowing records, because when you DJ and you grabbing certain parts and you pulling them back and you running certain parts. So, you know, where certain breaks are, you understand the meaning of the break beat. You understand, just the technicality of everything that goes into DJing. So when you apply that to production, it gives you an advantage. Like I said, I started off DJing with a friend of mine that grew up, he was like two houses from me, my man Mufi, Melvin Dinkins. And me and him shared turntables. Basically, I found some way or found a turntable. His parents bought him a turntable. So we both had one turntable. We would go at the school and do it. You know, and that's how we started off. And then from there, he ended up getting this little, I don't even know what that thing was called, but it was a little rack mount, little two second sampler he had. He had some kind of little sampler. So that was when we first got into and started trying to loop stuff up and starting to try to make beats. But, you know, to more, you know, answer your question, I mean, I definitely think as a DJ, you get the advantage because, like I said, the understanding and the collecting, you know, of the record side. I used to ask every uncle, every friend of a friend, anybody I knew and just be like, hey, by the way, you got any crates of records sitting around you don't need?
He's so humble. Only a DJ will buy a whole record store. This fool bought a whole record store. Tell us
on Legendize.
Yeah, they were mad at me, man. I up in City Island. It was a spot, one of the known spots up in City Island, man. One of the digging spots in City Island.
In the BX, right here.
Yeah. I think Mufi, my guy Mufi told me about it. He was like, yo, it's this record store up here that I came across or whatever. You should go and check it out. So we went there a few times. And then I just was just like, hey, man, I asked the guy. I said, how much for all, every soul record, every art, everything soul, every jazz, everything in here. Only just keep, you know, I don't really want the rock stuff or whatever, but everything else I want to wipe you out. How much? He gave me a price and I showed up with a U-Haul truck and everybody was mad.
Oh, shit. So who influenced you?
Oh my God, man. I mean, it starts from the Sound of Philadelphia, man. Like, you know, with that from the door, obviously Quincy Jones. And then when you move into, you know, hip hop, like, I mean, I'm not just saying it because you hear Marley. No, I've expressed this to him personally for this. Marley is like my number one hip hop producer ever. I always say it like this guy, like seriously, like Marley, like what you have done, you know, for hip hop as a whole. And in me personally, man, just like I said, growing up and listening to the radio early, man, like all of that work you put in, man, like you're definitely amazing, man. And you're my number one, you know, hip hop producer ever, hands down. I don't care. Yeah. And then I go on to Teddy Riley, like what Teddy Riley is able to do from the R&B side as well as hip hop, you know, especially as a youngster coming into the game, doing all those hip hop records that a lot of people don't even know that he did. And then, you know, I look at even like Bomb Squad, man. Those are my favorites right there. It grew to other people later, you know, that I also and I respect now. But, you know, the beginnings, those right there, those are my guys, man. And Marley, I like to tell you once again, I've told you this probably 100 times, man, like number one to me in hip hop, man, hands down.
Well, I appreciate it. I appreciate the love. That's real talk.
On a side note too, Marley, I don't know if you remember this though. We squatted on you plenty of times outside of BLS trying to give you the new style record.
You probably got that in the crates. Don't even know what the hell that's.
Yo, I'm talking about plenty of nights we squatted on. We caught you, I think, one time and actually got it to you. But we squatted so many times trying to catch you either going in or coming out of that joint or just sitting outside, like listening to the show and be like, okay, he's off now. Let's try to catch him coming out.
We used everything,
right there,
man.
On Second Avenue.
No? Second Avenue.
We use every tactic in the book.
That's Second Avenue.
Yeah, man. Like, we were determined. We were determined, man, for real, yo.
Yo, that's where I met Carly.
Yeah, he was good. I ran up to the WBLS lobby looking for him, and he was getting in the elevator, and the elevator doors were closing. And I opened them shits up like a subway car. I was like, yo, Wally, I'm trying to speak to you. So I feel you. Wow. And that was as the new style.
Yeah, new style. Yep.
Wow.
Yep. We had that record. We had a record called Scuffing Those Knees, and we ran down on
Scuffing the Knees. That's right, because you had a whole album out,
yep,
right?
Yep.
Wow.
Yep. Independent leaders.
It's the new style.
Stepping on my midnight stroll. The squad father, infamous daddy. Of the soul, yeah, granted, this is a hip hop black hole coming deep. You swear the beef started. There's your boy, bum bum, rustin' bombarded. Getting got
your wow.
I bet you a lot of people don't know that they were independent.
You know what's crazy, too? If y'all was down with Ms. Rob back then, you already know Mr. Magic was rocking that shit.
Yeah.
You already know that shit. That was like off the back. Ms. Rob, Mr. Magic, come on. You already know. That was like, I could have met you all over there.
Word.
I remember I first went to Ms. Rob house back in the day. Ms. Rob, she paid me before Mr. Magic paid me.
Word.
She said, hey, put this in your pocket, baby. I know he ain't giving you shit.
Now, speaking of Mr. Magic, I remember a guy that lived right next door to me. He had like a 2020 boombox. And I remember sitting out there on the porch with him. And it was, I think Mr. Magic was broadcasting that Run DMC thing at the Apollo, whatever. Yeah. And we were all just sitting around the box listening to that, man. That was so epic, man.
This nigga Magic used to get records. This nigga get the record, take the record out, get the envelope and start going like this.
start snowing.
Nothing fall out. That nigga break the record. Yo, he was mean. That nigga was like, fuck that.
Yes, he was.
That nigga was getting it, nigga. I was like, yeah, that motherfucker.
So magic, magic, ooh. super blast, clash.
Boom.
That nigga was getting it.
Classic. Yeah.
Legendized.
Hey, yo, this is the part of the show that we call Who Chopped Ya?
Who chopped ya? Who chopped ya?
In this segment of the game, you're going to find out who chopped ya. We take a sample from back in the day, and then we break down a few records that use that sample. Today's sample of the day is...
Well, I was digging. I found a little Ozzy Brothers sample. Something called Make Me Say It Again, Girl, Part 1 and Part 2. What? Y'all might be familiar with it, but let's play it. Ozzy Brothers.
Mr. Big.
Now, who sampled that, Molly?
Who sampled that? Well, back in the day.
Who I chopped said,
you? Word.
Corrupt and Roscoe featuring Daz Dillinger. And it went like this.
Keep it positive. Keep it pushing. Riding out. Enjoying ourselves.
Yeah.
Enjoying our lives. Yeah. Situation unchanged. My momentum is up. Sorry is instrumental in development, but
Bone Thugs and Harmony also sampled this joint in the Crossroads, produced by DJ Unique. Went a little something like this.
Boom, 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 boom.
Now tell me what you gonna do,
but it ain't nowhere to run.
When judgment comes for you,
when judgment comes for you,
what you gonna do,
but it ain't nowhere to hide.
When judgment comes for you,
Wow. Who else sampled this, Molly?
In 1992, Naughty by Nature.
What?
Sampled it on this hit right here, and it goes like this.
Oh. Oh.
Got you, Cali. Got you, Cali.
That hits a little different.
Ooh, 30,000 hands saying, hey, ho.
Arenas.
Come on, man. When you think about, you know, a Bones record, that was dope because it was so different. The Corrupt one was kind of the same way, you know, because you know, they put it on 45 and sped it up just like we did. But Bone actually replayed theirs and it was slow and a whole different feel and vibe. And I love that record. I mean, who doesn't? Who don't?
Hey, we have the biggest record. That's how I feel about it.
but who don't love Crossroads, man? Crossroads was dope.
Yeah, Crossroads was a good one. Hey, AK, Tom Marley, right? Tell Marley that we never cleared the sample. And then when Crossroads came out and they gave the Isleys credit, they came after us. Yo.
Wow, after the fact.
The thing is, statute of limitation was passed. So Isley Brothers basically was like, you know, we're not asking you to go back. We're just asking them from this day moving forward, which was forward. Cool.
Oh, that's dope.
So we were like, okay, bet. Yeah. You know, that's fair.
What did you use back then to make that joint?
What, Hip Hop Array?
Drum machine.
Oh, I had an MPC 60 then. You know, early days, like with OPP and our first album and all, mostly all of that. I think I did Ganja Grill and another record on our first album. By that time, like when we got the advance, I was able to get an MPC. But most of that stuff was done in Dave's studio. Like when we say Dave, drop a load on him. That's the guy Dave's studio. And that's when I talk about, you know, just having positives from what, you know, what was a negative. We actually got introduced to Dave from the whole Bon Ami Sugar Hill crew. They introduced us to that studio and had us record most of the new style records in there. That gave us the opportunity to meet Dave. And when it was time for us to leave, we were just like, hey, Dave, you know, we're not with them no more, but can we pay you and just come and work on our demo in your studio? And he was like, bet. So that was the good thing we got out of that.
That's
but
crazy.
Yeah, like back then, like in our early days of stuff, I didn't have no equipment. I would just go and use the studio equipment, just come in with records and have ideas and just loop it up.
Legendize.
I know y'all can't wait to hit them stages again. That's real talk right there. Pandemic came, shut everything down.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, you know what? I'm getting a little antsy. Like, of course, we've been blessed to tour for like, again, this year, we're celebrating our 30th anniversary. So we've literally toured 29 years straight, you know? So when the pandemic hit, I was like, bet, this is a much needed break. But now I'm getting a little antsy. I'm like, you know what? It's definitely time to get back out here, man, and make some noise and make the people happy and feel good again, you know?
That's what's up.
Let's go back again.
To where?
To their first tour.
Okay.
Each of you give me a memory of your first, it could be bad or good, because this is Legendize Podcast, a memory of your first tour, a naughty first tour.
Well, I remember our first tour was with Public Enemy. I remember that, you know. It was who was it? Public Enemy,
Latifah, Heavy D.
Ghetto Boys on there? I think so. Ghetto Boys.
They were probably regional. Definitely Tribe Called Quest. No, Leaders of the New School, Tribe Called Quest.
Wow.
I remember we had one part of the show where I'd be like, ladies, throw them panties on the stage. Yo, we came home with like 70 bags of panties.
Actually, I can refresh Stretch's memory. We would be crushing the show. And then we shut the show down. I'm like, yo, Stretch, I mean, something ain't right here. Like, yo, everywhere we go, there's usually 20, 30, 50 pairs of bras and panties up here. I don't see nothing up here. Oh, word?
The shower.
Next thing you know,
the shower.
Literally had lawn and leaf bags full of bras and panties with it.
What song followed that?
OPP, baby.
OPP,
baby.
Okay. I remember when we first came out and we were so hot, man, you know, that I remember this vivid as day, like, I believe we were like in Rhode Island. So we had an intro. I would come out first and then, you know, Tretch would come out, but he would come out and not say anything and just stand there like Michael Jackson.
Yes.
I remember the crowd yelling so much that Tretch had braids back then. And till this day, I remember just looking at him and his braids are blowing backwards because it was so much more. Yo, this is crazy. Like, just the crowd, yo.
You call that Mack and Jackson right there. That was Mack and Jackson.
Yeah, without the gloves.
was true vapors.
Yeah, definitely. Shout out Public Enemy, man. Chuck D and the crew, man, for even allowing us to go out on our first tour, man. I mean, even before we went out there, Chuck came over to the Flavor Unit, and we had a meeting, and he just sat us down and just like, listen, guys, this is what we expect from you guys. Can't get out here acting a fool. You know, it was dope, though, man. We appreciate that, man. Gave us an opportunity to go, you know, to see the world, man, and get out there and do what we're talking about, what we love to do, man. And it was dope.
And also, I can't forget, you know, big shout to Flavor Flav, because I definitely learned a lot from Flav on that first tour. You know what I'm saying? Complimented Chuck and accented Chuck, and he was jumping all over the stage left, right.
He's the greatest hype man ever.
Yeah, I definitely took a lot of notes from Flav and knew, you know, what to do up there, man, once you get that mic. A lot of people don't realize, man, once you grab that mic, it's serious business out there. And that's why. I just kind of reposted, you know, Jay-Z commenting on when he first toured with DMX, where he's like, yo.
Yes, hard act to follow.
Crowd, and then he's come out there running, going nuts. And then he takes his shirt off halfway through. And then he does a prayer and the whole crowd crying. And then they're like, all right, Jay, you go. Follow that.
Yeah.
Coming out here saying words.
So we definitely had a lot of those moments too, Marley, because, you know, when, again, we had a lot of practice, man, when we were the new style, from getting booed and fighting our way through competing with everyone. Man, once we had hit records and videos to go with it, we literally had artists just begging us, man, like, please, yo, I cannot follow y'all. Whatever we have to do, let's work this out. You know what I mean? They was literally
throwing money at us, dropping off a couple of bags.
But we definitely not trying to catch that L, yo. We definitely not trying to catch that L.
Legendize.
You are definitely a musical band who has the most anthems, or the biggest anthem in music outside of Francis Scott Key, who has Star Spangled Banner. But when y'all were coming up with these joints, as Marley talks about his classics, you never knew that you were making classics in the making. But were there any songs that y'all recorded that you thought would be as big as OPP or Hip Hop Hooray and didn't go anywhere?
Nah, see, the thing is that sophomore jinx, like, he was worried about these fools for these 2 years. They've been dropping on us and doing this, and ain't no way in the world he following up this album. No way, right. No single, right. No nothing. OPP, they got to top that for one on the next album.
Yes, yes.
Mm. We dropped Hip Hop Array on them after that. Woohoo! Blew OPP up before. They said, never question these fools again. Lord Jesus. They done blew the socks off. Never question them. So that was it. After we came with Hip Hop Array, after OPP, we ain't suffer from no flops. We was up making New York anthems, uptown anthems.
Yeah, yeah.
Just doing borough anthems. We gonna hit them from all angles. We gonna show them we still street. We got this. We got so many different levels of anthems. It's amazing.
And I'm sure there's a few records along the way we thought would be bigger than they were. Maybe like a Clap Your Hands or like Craziest, you know, so-and-so homies are the craziest. You know?
Hump in the hump, stuck in the trunk, pumping me up, pumping me up.
But those were like harder songs. So it's kind of like once you get in that lane where you have those kind of like crossover feel good party songs that are sort of non-threatening.
Yes, yes.
The labels get used to those kind of songs. But if you come with a song like A Craziest, which has that universal potential feel, they're like, well, we know because it's a harder track or the lyrics are a bit harder, we may not promote it as much, you know?
All right, I want to ask each one of y'all individually this question. Vin, what was your I made it moment when you realized that, yo, it's on, when you realized you made it?
Well, I felt like we made it once we came out in 91 and we did the American Music Awards. So you know, we didn't expect to win an American Music Award. I mean, American Music Award back then was kind of like bigger than the Grammys, or at least as big, because Dick Clark was the man, you know?
Yeah.
So we won unexpectedly. And I remember.
And that's voted by the fans.
Right. Yeah. So when we won that, I was like, yo, we definitely made it. And I remember when we went up to the podium, I was like, all praises due to Queen Latifah. And I remember when I got home, there was a Muslim brother that was like, listen, brother, I watched the award show. And he was like, I understand you wanted to give her props, but all praises only go to Allah. And wow. I was like, okay,
first, I get first she screams out New Jersey. They're like, you can't let Vince. You can't let Vince start nothing.
Calling me up like for a meeting. Brother.
Brother. And I do. I remember Trent saying to us on stage once we won that American Music Award. He was like, I don't know what. I don't know what's going on. We about to make a lot of money. You know, he's like, we about to make a lot of money.
It may have been a little premature, but I know one of my we definitely made it moments was when New York Radio just started playing OPP like over and over again and blasting. And rotation. Then cars was coming through the block, through 18th Street and blasting it.
Get out with OPP.
And we would just sit there, and I was just sitting there, like, I would just sit on my porch, like, this is unbelievable. Wow. Like finally. Like, especially when we talk about running up on DJs and trying to get a DJ to play your records to them finally won't stop playing it. And I was just like, wow, this is dope. Like, finally, we may have made it now. And like I said, it may have been premature because it was only one record so far, but... Right. I felt like, you know, all of the hard work that we put in for a couple of years and then even going through the whole Bon Ami situation and not working with independent leaders with the new style. And then finally to get with Flavor Unit and be called Naughty by Nature and our first record out the box seemed to be connecting now. I just felt like we're here.
So, Tretch, what was Tretch's moment?
It was two times for me where I felt that the first time when I went to Ray Katina, they told me I couldn't get that Benz. I said, why, yo? He said, you ain't got good credit or bad credit. You ain't got no credit.
No credit. Mm,
they was like, yo, you don't know who that is? That's Trust from Naughty by Nature. That's Trust. I said, you know what? I'll see you tomorrow. I came back the next day and bought that shit cash.
That's what's up.
No, we made it. Then it was this spot. Me, Kay, and Ben, we was doing promo run with like A-Line or something. And I think Video Jukebox had just started coming out, and they was playing OPP like back to back 100 times a day.
That's right. It was that request
music
show.
Box, yo.
Hey, 99 Cents, they play it out. As many times as you play it, you buy it, they're gonna play it. And we had a couple of days just playing, and we went to walk some mall, and the crowd chased us like the Beatles. And security ran down on us like, yo, y'all can't never come in here. I got a call beforehand. And when we was actually running from them people, I said, yo, we done made
it. Legendize.
This is the story of how a film gets made. Starring Josh Rubin.
It's his first feature.
You Were the Worst's Aya Cash.
Can we not do this right now?
And SNL's Chris Redd.
He's not doing it for a paycheck.
Okay. I'll see y'all.
Join us for the making of Scare Me, a horror comedy from the brilliant mind of Josh Rubin.
This year you're going to make a movie no matter what.
Tear down the fourth wall of filmmaking with our crack team of investigators.
Don't you come at me and try to get me to spill some stuff.
This is Make Cool Shit, hosted by Aaron Hayfetz.
It doesn't get any better than this.
Season 1, Make a Movie.
3, 2, 1.
Everywhere you enjoy podcasts.
So I guess I'm going to learn the film business.
Legendize.
Is there a defining moment in your career, in the career of Naughty by Nature, where each of you feel, yeah, we deserve to be legendized. We deserve to be legends.
Probably after the Grammys. Probably after the Grammys, because, you know, you have people who have had, you know, records and done stuff. But, you know, like I said, American Music Award was voted by the fans, which is great. But then, you know, when you, you know, for your peers to actually, you know, give you your accolades or give you your flowers and vote for you and say you deserve it for the work you've done. And we have already put a few albums in already. I felt like at that point, it was just like, yes, here we are.
You know, usually the milestones is like 20, 25 years. Like for a hip hop group or any group, like to be together and tour now 30 years.
Wow, that's incredible.
And still be doing these arenas and worldwide and new generation and older generation still. I think that's a level where it's certain undeniability. You feel me? Like y'all done put that work in like that for over a decade now. Three decades.
Yeah.
And I kind of feel like, you know, unlike a lot of artists today or people in the industry today, really like they're culture vultures. So they go into this expecting to reap and rape the rewards of being a successful hip hop artist. You know, the beauty of when we came up, it was that organic, pure love of the culture, you know, and it wasn't about the monetary gain. It was about the skill set. So that's what we concentrated on, was the skill set and just being skillful in what you do. And then it's about putting in the work. So if you're putting in the work and you're doing it from an honest space, what I realized is over the years, at a certain point, people just started approaching you saying, yo, y'all are legends, man. I think when you don't expect from people or you don't expect these accolades is when they come to you. But if you focus on the mission at hand, just putting out that good work and putting out those good vibes and, you know, just working towards whatever your goal is, when that stuff starts coming, you're like, well, the people are saying it, you know? It's not about what I'm saying or what I'm feeling. If the people are saying it and the people are crowning you that way, then obviously they appreciate the work and the hard effort. But today, somebody I have a half a hit and say, yo, I'm the king of the world. I'm the king of hip-hop.
I'm legendary now.
Yeah, nothing came before me or nothing came after me, man. And when you start just claiming that yourself, then you game and screw it all up.
You know, I be telling people, a lot of people, they come, you know, they be like, yo, I rap, I'm this, yo, I this, I'm this. I'm like, yo, but ain't nobody telling me that but you.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? Ain't nobody telling me that but you. So once everybody's running up on me like, yo, you know, so yeah, that nigga nice, but then I'm going to believe you. But if you just the only one telling me, I'm like, I don't really know. So I hear that all day. I'm like, yo, kid,
we don't believe you. You need more people.
Motherfuckers all day going to be like, yo, I could do this. Yo, I be flipping this. I'm doing it, blah, blah, blah. But, yo, you the only one talking. So
yeah,
it really don't mean that much.
And this is one of the reasons why we have this Legendized podcast.
Yeah.
It's because we want to bring artists like you, legendary artists like you who put the work in and the results show. And we want to express to our listenership why you deserve to be legendized. Not only from us, but to hear your background and realize the work that you put in and where it came from, the origin of where it came from. That's our goal here at Legendized Podcast. And we couldn't have like a better guest as a first group to legendize than the new style. Because 30 years, you know, we think about people in our generation. The only person who comes to my mind is like New Edition.
Mm.
And we talk about those who don't, you know, who go through the breakups and some of them never get back together again. But now we're looking at 30 years, which we think about back in East Orange in the mid 80s, that how many people were thinking that hip hop would go this far?
When I first heard hip hop, to be straight honest, I could let y'all know I didn't think it was going no motherfucking where. that's why I had to change it.
Yeah.
You get what I'm saying? I didn't think it was going no motherfucking where. Not with bands playing fucking sitting there trying to play break beats and it's not sounding tight. And no echoes on the records, no scratching. That's why I fell in love with hip hop, coming to tapes up in Harlem. Tapes up in the Bronx with the echo, the scratching, the real break beats, and that shit talking, and eventually a few gunshots in the background, and you have everybody scuffling and running, the music stop. You get what I'm saying? That's how the party ended. You know what I'm saying? So that's why I fell in love with hip hop. That's why when I first heard those first early hip hop records, I was like, man, this shit ain't going nowhere, man. But then I got with Mr. Magic and became his DJ, and I had an opportunity to change where it was going.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, the sound and the whole.
Because he's the one playing all this shit. So I'm like, yo, whatever we put out is going to be what's going to be the shit.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And, you know, and that's why when I started sampling, it was so different to everybody. But it was what they loved about hip hop from the beginning anyway, the real shit.
Right.
The real beats. The real Impeach the President that was always rocking the parties, but niggas never sampled it. Why not? Why not put that shit on a fucking record?
That's right.
And that's what Legendize is about, to get that across. And you know, and we wasn't really doing it for the money. We was doing that just to fucking have our head knocking and see people dancing. That's all the fuck we did it for.
Legendize.
So 30 years of evolution of hip hop. Who are each of you feeling, if anyone, at this very moment in hip hop?
I mean, it's so many now. You got Lil Baby, you got Roddy Ricch, you got Drake, of course, is out there like that. You got Cardi B, you got Nicki coming back out with, you got Doja Cat, you got Saweetie, you got, and I like T Grizzly, like I like the Grizzly Grimy, like you got all the ASAPs in New York and my dudes.
Yeah, there. No doubt.
You feel me?
Yeah. Herb the Rock.
For me, it's like that. I feel they say so much. It's mumble rap with Sunday. I got favorites. I listen to these kids is really dope, and they saying something all the time.
So thank you.
That's my quick
one. Yeah, I feel like there's multiple ones. You know, like most of the ones like Tretch mentioned. You know, also J. Cole. You know, Corday. You know, guys like that that is also doing something that's a little bit different as well. Obviously Kendrick Lamar, but you know, like. It's a lot of good, you know, it's a lot of whack stuff that's out there, but it's also a lot of good stuff. And there's always been whack stuff in music. So, but overall, I think like me personally, the only problem that I tend to have sometimes is just the marketing that everybody tends to sound the same or look the same. Whereas back in the days, it was a lot more diversity. You know, you had the Slick Rick.
You know what switched it a little bit too? People had to stop sampling. Cause they was getting them samples started to be too much and they started doing their own production for real.
And everybody got the same sound packs.
When you took that sample element out, you heard the difference.
Yeah, that's a sound thing, but I'm talking about even like from a perspective and just from a presentation side or the swag side, everybody seems to look alike. And even the approach and the concept of what they're talking about, it just seems to be the same stuff sometimes. It just tends to be that way a lot, you know. Where we had, you know, from the Biz Markies to the Slick Ricks, you know, to the BDP, you know, all the way to, you know, to X-Clan, to so many different styles of different people that you heard, you know. And I would just like to see, you know, and hear just a little bit more. But like I said, I mean, there's a lot of music that's out there across the board of just great records that people are putting out from, a lot of different artists as well.
Yeah, that's why I like, I feel Drake is one of the smartest musicians of our day in hip hop. You know, the way he's able to be so diverse, he could do the street music. He knows how to use his crew. He knows how to use a production team, a writing team. And, you know, he just knows how to do it across the board. It's smart in what he's doing. And then I love like Jay-Z, man. He's the time-tested, you know, he's been through it all, man. And for him to be able to continue to do the music and move the industry as far as business, because, you know, this is music and this is business. So no longer can we be the victims of, oh, we're getting pimped out and this, that, and the other. So what 50 and, you know, Jay-Z and Diddy and all of these guys are doing on the business side as well as the music, it's a beautiful thing. And I do like the Roddy Riches and the J. Coles and the Kendrick Lamars. So I caution a lot of our peers to, like, you know what? Be careful to not cannibalize our culture, man. Just don't say, oh, all of this new music is whack, because all of the new music isn't whack. If you take and do dive, the hip hop is so diverse right now that you could find every kind of genre, subgenre in hip hop that's available out there. So you're being lazy just to say all new hip hop is whack, because that's not the truth. You got Griselda out there crushing them. It's like, yo, let's be careful not to cannibalize our culture and extract who is really doing it right and big them up, man. It doesn't hurt to big somebody up.
Pusheisty.
Pusheisty. No, yeah.
Pusheisty.
Word up. Hey, Boogie, right?
Hey, Boogie, yep.
However, you know, I do have to say, man, the violence in today's hip hop, it's just out of control, man. It's like,
oh, man,
our young people are just killing for nothing. And the way the culture is going for these young people, man, it's like we're killing ourselves off, or our young people are killing ourselves off. And that's why I like what Lil Baby is doing, because he comes from that genre, but he is making an effort to put a little or a lot more consciousness into what he's doing out there. So we definitely have to concentrate on that, because I see even right now, like Prime 112 in Miami Beach, you know, they were just shooting out there. Another concert out there. It's like people are just shooting up the line just because they can't get to the artists inside. And now it's causing for discrimination in restaurants and clubs and different venues, where they're just looking at Black people saying, look, I don't want you here. I don't care if you're a millionaire, artist, athlete, whatever. We know what that's going to bring. So for us within, we definitely have to work to kind of quell this violence, man, because it's not going to be good. And you're going to see a lot more racial profiling, just blatant discrimination, and saying, yo, your money isn't wanted here because you're going to ruin my business.
That need to be said. That's real talk.
Legendize.
Yeah, and you're talking about hip hop in today's generation. As Naughty by Nature, probably the only hip hop group who branded their logo as much as they did outside of like Wu-Tang, probably, with no social media.
Yeah, how'd y'all do that before social media?
And how would you suggest others move nowadays?
You know what? We did funny things. Like, once we had our shirts, like Tommy Boy made the first shirts, we made sure we made a homeless run. Like, all the homeless people that was on the streets, we made them shirts. You know how far they go? All over boroughs, everything, all over, everywhere. Giving it to all of them. Then we made it where they had to stop putting Tommy, but we had stickers. If you get your luggage any airport across the United States, you see an OPP sticker on there.
We saw them everywhere.
You see an OPP sticker there, a Naughty logo.
Oh, you know the change? You thought the change in the toll booth?
Yeah.
Listen, Naughty sticker right there.
Them stickers and shirts and everything else. Before that, you had to make sure your logo was floating all over the place. We made sure that we had our team with packets of stickers and shirts and all.
Yeah, we looked at it like a bat signal. Like, we was just like, yo, anything, everything. We got our flag. Naughty by Nature's our flag, and we putting it down everywhere. Mm. And we just made sure, you know, that was out front. It comes from the beginning when we first started off, even as a new style, us trying to market and making sure that people understand the brand and understand who it is. It stuck with us, and it still stick with us to this day. I mean, every time, you know, we're doing something, anything that goes on, you know, you're going to see that logo out front and out.
And we was following Public Enemy lead too, because PE had that
and
gear
Run
on
DMC lot. And Run DMC.
Oh yes, with the
and NWA
the
and Run DMC. You know, same thing. You know, two MCs, one DJ. Our whole thing. We always looked up to Run DMC, and our whole thing was always just like, yo, we need to be like Run DMC. We need to be like Public Enemy. Look at that logo. Look at that thing. Like, we always followed those guys like that, and just was like, yo, our marketing got to be up to par, just like those guys.
Study the game.
You know, I think the second part of your question is, how do you tell the young people how to market their brand. There was a time in hip hop where all of the hip hop brands dominated, from Fat Joe 360 to Wu-Tang brand to Rockaware to our stuff. You know, we got smart and we said, instead of getting pimped out by some of these brands, it could be an Adidas or a Tommy Hilfiger or wearing just Gucci and Louis Vuitton, reinvest in yourself. And right now, it's the same thing applies. It's like a lot of our young people are making a lot of money, but just think, before you drop that 100 grand at the jewelry guy, before you drop that 250 at the Lamborghini and the Bentley guy, save some of this money for yourself. Save it for your brand. You could take 200 grand and reinvest in yourself and spread that out there. It's going to carry a lot further than you just walking up being draped in jewelry, draped in Gucci and Louis Vuitton, and getting out of your Lamborghini and your Bentley. You're actually doing the work for them, and they're reinforcing their brands, and actually they're designing their clothes strictly for our culture. So we're just taking bags and bags and boatloads of our money and dumping it into other people's brands without saving anything for ourselves. So this is what we've always done, you know, and when the big brand said no to us, it always made us say, well, bet. We're going to double down and triple down on reinvesting in ourselves, and we'll always have merch out there. And I think that's what it's about. You know, each one teach one, share these resources, share these strategies, man. And Louis and Gucci and Balenciaga, they can't pimp us out, man, and just have us promoting for them for free. We need to, you know, repositioning our brands and take some of that market share back.
I definitely see that. I see y'all are definitely on the, y'all ain't getting our money. We going to control our money and however it flows out. Y'all can't just be, there's no all these side deals on, you know, everything going on. There's none of that bullshit right. going on. I understand. Is that kind of like why y'all redid your masters back in, y'all just recently redid your masters?
Absolutely. Yep.
Talk to us about that.
Because I try to tell the Juice Crew that like 10 years ago, they was like, duh, what?
Yeah, because this music game, you know, this new language now. And also, you know, after a certain amount of time, you know, you have everybody have a revert, you know, clause in their contract where you can go and do it. Right. And it has evolved so much now that people that came up back then are all in these, you know, positions up in these marketing companies, also running a lot of these high level companies, and they grew up on that music. So when they come at you and it's time for them to clear a master, you know, if you have your own master, then they talk strictly to you.
They don't have to go to Tommy Boy, right?
You know, and you know what? To be honest, shout out Tommy Boy, because Tom Silverman was the first one to call us and tell us. He was like, hey, listen, guys, you know, right now, you guys can go and re-record your master and have your own master. And we were basically like, really? And he was like, yeah, like you can actually go and do that right now. And we went and did it. So, you know, I know Tom gets a lot of rap, and even a lot of the old record companies. And I mean, I'm not saying Tom's a saint either, you know, so because we had our ups and downs.
We had our ups and downs
with Tom. So everything wasn't all gravy. But he did tell us that point, and he put us up on it, man. And we went and did it, you know, to allow us to, you know, have our own master.
And wow, I think that's sure. where we are in hip hop right now. Again, you know, we came from the age of give us the check, give us the advance. We're not thinking about the back end. And because the South and other regions were boxed out, they didn't even have a chance to deal with the labels in that sense, which is why they were so independent. So right about now, man, this is the maturation of hip hop, where this is the business side of music. Uh-huh. We've done music for the last 40 years. Now it's time to do the business side. And there's nothing wrong with concentrating and putting your energy on the business side so we could level this playing field, not even level it, just bring it back to where we are. Because when you really look at it, back in the day, the guys, and shout to all of the white guys, all of the independent labels who financed early hip hop, all they had was a credit line and good credit to go out there and lend or extend the credit line to finance this beautiful culture. So at what point do we go to our banks and say, well, listen, we have a permanent or a stable cash flow. We want to extend a line of credit so we could finance ourselves and we could bank on ourselves instead of giving the house away.
Mm-hmm. Right. And that was one of the good things about, even we mentioned earlier about the pandemic. One of the great things that came about this pandemic was, you know, time for us to sit back and focus on our business side of what was going on with our business throughout all of these years. And we found some faults and some things that we had to fix. And we're fixing them now, you know. And because if we didn't have the pandemic, we probably would still be running, still doing whatever, and probably had no time to even catch some of the things that was going on. And there's a lot of artists out there that probably, you know, don't even understand a lot of the stuff that what we're talking about, what you're saying, like the reversion of the of masters and a lot of different things. People are starting to understand it. And like you said, with the whole thing now, everything being digital, a lot of the language has changed and a lot of things are being shifted around. So people just got to make sure they be careful and understand it, but also look back at your copyright.
Some of these companies that hold your money, you don't even know. They've been sitting on it.
Oh, you know about that, Marley.
Yeah, I just got all my copyrights back. Everything.
Everything.
The great thing about this whole thing is that now we're in 21. In four more years, our first album, 1991, will own everything back. We'll get the masters and the publishing. So we will own that whole album back. Word. Yes, yeah. We got four more years. Right. And we're going to have that back. Right. And that's what it's all about. Like Vince said, man, like you put your work in and then you get to a point where you strictly focus on your business and set the stuff up for life, you know, because at the end of the day, you can't do it forever. But Tretch always says, like, this ain't sports or nothing. You don't retire from hip hop or from music. You die off.
Thank you.
You die off. So our whole thing is just like, man, we want to make sure that if it does come to that or whatever point it comes through, that our business is straight and we allow stuff like publishing and our flow through to be for our state and for your kids or your grandkids. That's what you want. You don't want nobody out here owning that or controlling
that.
That's right. And now you're talking about generational wealth. And now you're talking about the maturation of hip hop. And these are the themes that you see, you know, Master P and Jay-Z and Diddy and 50 Cent talking about. So there's nothing wrong with growing up and putting together your estate. Because, hey, the way hip-hop is, look at all of us, man. We look super young compared to our ages. And, you know, this is the gift that hip-hop has given us. So now we use these assets to set up our estate. And now we get to build generational wealth and explain this to our kids and explain this to, you know, our family. So we let them know, like, this is stuff that you never sell. This is institutional stuff now.
Right.
You know what? We're always advocates of enlightening our youth.
That's what's up.
And in your future endeavors, or whatever they may be as individuals or as a group, we know you got the 30th anniversary. But as I hear you talk, if we can get together, our generation could get together to help consult some of these young artists, because they don't have people to talk to them about credit, about their business, about their life investments, how they can make that generation wealth really happen and come to fruition. So that's something that, as I hear each and every one of you talk, that I really wish that we could come together and create some type of support where we can consult these young individuals.
Legendize.
30th year anniversary. What are each of you doing individually, like now or for the future? Tretch, what you got popping?
Man, you know, we got a lot of things, especially through the music. It's a lot of different projects going on. Me and the homie Jay Wex is like doing the Legends, a whole bunch of our era MCs getting on tracks, getting together, doing collabs that never done collabs before. Fatal Hussein, his album, Rest in Peace, Outlaws.
Oh, dope. Rest in peace.
That's knocked out. Right now, number one show on BET Plus, The Family Business. I'm a Muslim assassin on there, Brother X. So we still doing the Hollywood. Coming out, you know, Equal Standards just went to theaters. We was working on that so long. So me, Taheem, Ice-T, we got that out. And just Grizzly grinding on that. Grizzly grinding, you know.
No doubt. KG, you went from Naughty by Nature sound, crossed over to R&B.
Made endless
amounts of hits.
Yeah.
Outside of Naughty by Nature, what else you got going on?
The same thing, just developing new artists, you know, still have, you know, my rapport and my relationship with my classic artists that I've, you know, developed from back in the days, like Jhené and Next and Jaheim.
Yes.
You know, but at the same time, I'm developing some new artists. I'm going to continue to stay in the studio just doing it because I love it. I mean, that, like, I'm like, seriously, I mean, you guys know, man, like, from DJing and producing, man, like, you can just sit there and do that stuff or talk it all day, man. So, you know, some of it's going to see the light of day, some of it's not, but you're going to do it because you love doing it no matter what, you know. So I'm going to continue to do that. I really love and get my, you know, rocks off on trying to develop brand new artists. So I'm going to continue to develop brand new artists and give them a platform as well. So you will always hear something, you know, fresh and new coming from me. When we also have a project that we're doing as well, R&B hip hop project. We got a Naughty Next project we're putting together. We didn't talk about that. So it'll be a combination of us along with the group Next. So we're working on that as well. Ooh. So that'll be coming up too as well.
Okay.
Vin.
Yeah. So, you know, for me, it goes back to what you were just talking about, you know, mentoring young artists and talking about financial literacy. So I'm actually partnered up with a digital bank called Money Avenue, similar to what Killer Mike and Greenwood Bank is doing.
Okay. Yes. Yes. Independent banking.
Yeah, so it's all about financial literacy, talking about credit health, business health, and setting up generational wealth and, you know, just having a healthy financial portfolio. And then I'm here back in my hometown in the city of East Orange, New Jersey, working with our mayor, Ted Green, along with Money Avenue. So we just got a whole portfolio of available real estate in the city. It's all about that build back the block. I just think that hip hop is so mature now, and we do make enough money and we do have the resources. It's time to grow up. This is what we're working on, which can spawn, you know, nationally, man, and the next generation will have a better advantage.
Now, the fans are waiting for the Juice Crew movie. We done talked about that almost every episode. Yeah. I heard you say something, Kay, a little earlier. Is there a Naughty movie on the way? And who's going to play each and every one of you? Well, Stretch.
Right now, for the 30th anniversary, we got the Naughty by Nature documentary coming this year. So we're working on a documentary now. And, you know, the biopic will come after that. But we're going to introduce it all and tell our story ourselves. Nobody else is going to tell it for us. We're going to tell our own story through the documentary. And then, you know, it'll grow at some point to our movie.
Well, I tell you, when the movie comes, probably see ASAP Rocky.
That would be dope.
Trigger.
Okay. He's doing his thing in front of the camera.
I think ASAP Rocky could pull that off.
Okay. You got to go see Brian Leach over there.
And the thing is, too, it's like we got a lot of, you know, compelling things to talk about, actually, you know, when it do get to the biopic, you know, like Ven was starting to dig into earlier, you know, just our early days, man, and pre, you know, new style days of our come up and our fight and struggle just to even get into this game. So
you got to put that Red Parrot shit in there, man, just to show how y'all bounce back. That's real talk, man.
Yeah.
That's real.
Oh, yeah.
Also, before we go, I definitely want to tell y'all about where we are with this new technology, man.
Is that the Oculus or something like that?
It's the Oculus Quest 2 headset. So right now, we're building out our VR, virtual reality metaverse. So we have a crazy, crazy Naughty Mansion we're building out. And this space is so intriguing, is so crazy, man, that you'll basically be able to build out your own virtual Disneyland or like a Elvis Graceland or like a Michael Jackson Neverland Ranch. And literally every fan from all across the globe will be able to come and play in this space. You know, we gamify in this space. You'll be able to have purchase digital merchandise and put it on your avatar and move around this space. We already had an initial conversation with Microsoft. So, you know, they're looking to partner up with us. So this VR metaverse space is definitely next wave and we out there on it. So look out for all of that.
What does a Naughty Mansion look like? It's, what's happening in a Naughty Mansion?
You have to make it through and drive through Ghetto Bastardsville.
a long driveway.
Legendized.
Wow. As a fan, I'm just in awe right now to be in the mix of all of you, including Marley, and to chop it up and to hear that there is a promising reality of Marley a Marley Marl produced Naughty joint.
Oh, absolutely.
We got to get that.
We would love
We have to get
that. Yes, we would love that, Marley. Seriously.
I'm going to the hard drive as soon as I get out of here.
Yeah, definitely. We would definitely be honored for that one, yo.
Hey, Marley, I'm going to tell you right now, though, Tretch and I, we're going to have to put in a call to do it all, man, to get his blessings, you know?
That's what's up.
Yes, you be mad if we'll call him.
Respect to the Lords. That's what's up. Well, I got to just say, man, I got to thank y'all for, man, taking your time out, being here today. This is crazy to me. I mean, who would think that in 21 that I would even come with a podcast, number one, number two? Who would think that we'd be sitting down and have this conversation that we just had? You know what I'm saying?
All three.
And number three, who would think that everybody in this motherfucking world can hear it like this?
No one is allowed as a guest on the show unless their resume screams legend.
That's right.
Your resumes are usually supposed to be one page. Your resume is like a book.
Right.
So there's no question on why you're here. You are legends. So on behalf of the podcast, you've just been
legendized. That's what I'm saying, man. And once again, man, good luck with everything you got planned coming out. I mean, I see it clearly. I see that y'all see it clearly. And it's just an extension of what you've been doing from day one. And it's good to see some black brothers on top of their motherfucking game.
No doubt.
And that's real talk.
Naughty forever.
Appreciate that's what it. I'm saying.
Bless you.
Peace.
All right.
Peace, guys. Peace. Y'all be safe.
Thank you, brothers.
Woo! That was incredible, man.
All three.
Wow. That went, how do we fall on that one? How do we get all three Naughty by Nature at one time?
Because we're legendized.
There we go. We legendized them, too.
Wow. No doubt. Tretch, Ving, KG.
Yeah, that was incredible, man. I got to say it, man. I like this, man. Wow. I'm looking forward to number four.
Who we getting next?
Ooh.
Let's keep them wanting more.
Legendized.
Yo, Tretch, why you think marijuana and music go together?
They both get you high.
That's true. Music gets you high.
Put you in that euphoria state. You feel what I'm saying? Weed and hip-hop, music as a whole just takes you somewhere. So the combination of both, it's like you elevated, walking right over the track.
Crocs and no socks. Stay away from Crocs and no socks. That's real.
And be showing them crusty ass feet.
Yeah, right.
That's crazy.